7 o'clock, so let's call this order. Call this meeting to order. Everyone please rise. Pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Coke?
Here.
Pelosimo?
Present.
Plocher? Leschewski?
Here.
Frieders?
Here.
Funkhauser?
Here.
Tarulis?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
A quorum is established.
Do we have any amendments to tonight's agenda? Yes.
I would like to pull number 1 and 13 from... Number 1 is a unified ordinance, and then number 13, yes.
So number 1 will go under EDC report, and number 13 will go under admin report. Any other amendments to tonight's agenda? All those in favor of amending the agenda as presented, please state aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, we have no presentations listed on the agenda, but I know Jason and Stephanie from Kiwanis are here and wanted to say a few words. So if you guys wanted to come forward now, you have the floor.
Is, I don't know if you know or not, the breezeway that attaches the
Winter Park and the garage is in terrible disrepair. The roof is in terrible disrepair. Years ago, the downspout fell off and they never replaced it, so there's a hole from the second floor just like beating down on the breezeway. So now there's a hole in the breezeway. And I don't know if you know, but most people know that water does not stay where it comes in. It goes to other places and it migrates. And it goes, it's creating damage in other parts of the building. So I thought I actually talked to Advanced Roofing, a York Co. company, who's given us a bid for the entire roof. But I asked him what it would be just to cap this breezeway. And he's just going to be venting tomorrow. I'm going to ask Bart now when I hear back from him. Just to cap this breezeway so we don't get any further, this building doesn't have any further damage. Because the future owner, it would be nice if the future owner of this building through RFP, if that happens, they have less repairs to make. If they're easily, fixed, it doesn't cost the taxpayer any money. This money is right here. And I can't speak for all of the society, but I would say that if there's quite enough there, that we could try to kick in the rest to at least stop the damage from happening to the building. The other thing that I just wanted to ask is that if you can go to RFP on this particular building, if you might consider putting a covenant in it so then it won't be torn down. So whatever they do to it, I believe, to be on the historical register, the federal historical register, the outside has to stay the same, but anything can happen to the inside. But if there's a covenant that it just can't be torn down, I don't know how that works, but I just thought that might be a good idea. I think I'll email that previously as well. So thank you for your time, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Robin.
Sure.
Any other citizen comments?
I'm Yolanda Lyra, but I just wanted to follow up with Robin's, what she said about the historic covenants. Those can be gotten free of charge from Landmark Preservation. They're very pro that, and they will do the work, all the legal work for you for into the sale of the building and everything like that. The title is transferred. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Pelosina?
Aye.
Melschewski?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Cope?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay, under Mayor's report, I do have a proclamation to read. Fairness and Equality Proclamation. Whereas December 3rd, 2018 marks the 200th anniversary of Illinois becoming the 21st state in the Union. And whereas the United City of Yorkville joins partners across the state in recognizing the Illinois Bicentennial and celebrating what is born, built, and grown in Illinois throughout the year. And whereas the Illinois Department of Human Rights is celebrating the Illinois Bicentennial by engaging at least 200 units of local government throughout the state to join the Fairness and Equality Campaign. And whereas the Fairness and Equality Campaign aims to celebrate and reaffirm the land of Lincoln's rich history of valuing diversity, inclusion, and non-discrimination. And whereas by supporting the Fairness and Equality Campaign, the United City of Yorkville hopes to inspire a welcoming and inclusive community that fosters greater understanding of others. And whereas the United City of Yorkville is proud to support the Fairness and Equality Campaign and urges local units of government throughout the state to reaffirm that the campaign's core principles are essential to an open, thriving, and diverse community. Therefore, I, Gary J. Galinsky, Mayor, do proclaim that the United City of Yorkville, Illinois, is proud to support the Fairness and Equality Campaign in celebration of the Illinois Bicentennial and encourage all residents to recognize and honor the core principles of diversity, inclusion, and non-discrimination, dated this 23rd day of October, 2018. Okay, with that, I will turn it over to Alderman Frieder for Public Works Committee report.
All right. I make a motion to approve a resolution authorizing a contract with Deconstruction Incorporated for the building demolition and site restoration project for the property at 111 West Madison Street and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
Second.
Okay, comments and questions? Yes, sir.
Well, I think after the last meeting that we had, a lot of better information kind of came to light. Once we had the contact between Lisa D. from Landmarks Illinois and Bart, things started to become a little bit more clear what our options were as far as what we can do with the property to avoid tearing it down, but more importantly, what we can do to avoid having to invest any money into it. So the information that's in the packet about, you know, cleaning up the RFP, trying it again, being a little bit more thorough with the benefits of the tax credits and all the bonuses that the Landmarks Illinois can be walking people through. I never wanted to tear it down. I just didn't want to have to pay for it. So I think the options have definitely become a little bit more broad. So I am in support of kind of seeing where that path will lead us as opposed to in quickly tearing it down. So nothing has really changed. Sell it or tear it down. So I'm looking forward to selling it better.
Anyone else?
Yes, sir. When we sent this back to admin and discussed this, this was a great revelation about Landmarks and their abilities and what they could potentially do. I know there's a real brief RFI in here that we're looking for RFP. The forehead that Mark has put in here from the Belleville RFP is, you know, a generally good proposal forehead. I'm not sure how long staff is looking to need to finalize the proposal. Maybe a couple weeks.
It'll be ready for the November 13th City Council meeting.
Okay. I think with that and the timetable that we get outlined in committee, in terms of how long we keep it out there published and what we're looking for, I think it's a good place to be for us right now in terms of trying to preserve the building without the taxpayer expenditures at this point. So right now I don't see anything other than us wanting to move forward with staff preparing the RFP.
Anyone else? Yes, sir.
I think really the only thing I would like to add is I agree with Joel. Sell it or tear it down. That's what I said last time. That's what I'm saying this time. I'm glad to see there's more viable options as an incentive for somebody to buy it. That's great. What I'd like to see, though, is if we do an RFP and we have proposals and people want to buy it, that's fine. We got to set some sort of deadline, though. I don't want this thing to just linger for the next year, 2 years, 3 years. Some council 4 years from now is not right back where we are today, saying, well, why don't we see if anybody wants to buy it? Well, we tried that once. Now we're trying it twice. I like to put some sort of deadline on it, put all the tax incentives out there for investors to see if somebody's willing to come in, buy it, rehab it, put it to a good use. Great. I'm happy to sell it, though. But if we don't have something by the deadline, I was going to be knocked it down. I'd just like to see some sort of end to this one way or the other. Somebody buys it, or we knock it down.
And how long was the initial idea to put an RFP out there for? Was it 60 days? Or?
The committee had discussed 120 days.
120?
Acceptable. And I think that's a reasonable timeline.
Is that for to put the information out and see if anybody's willing to make us an offer?
Yep.
Just purchase it from the city?
Yeah, the process that I did would be formal city council vote to start the RFP process. The document, again, should be finalized in the next city council meeting. It should be in final form in the packet for you to see. And then it's just a matter of releasing it, talking to interested parties, and trying to drum up support for it to get as many proposals as possible within the 120-day timeline. So as part of the review process, Landmarks Illinois they said that they would review the RFP and make some suggestions. So they thought that we could get more and better proposals. And so if they say 150 days or 180 days, I'll bring that back to the next city council meeting for discussion. Or if they think it's short, too, you never know. So we'll see what they say.
As a follow-up, as far as selling this to a private party, doing it this way, is that more towards the eventual sealed bid option, or we're going to have an appraisal and we're going to sell it for 80% of its value?
So Kathy can get into the technical details if you want, but we discussed the process 5 or 6 years ago when we did the last RFP. So there's the do the appraisal, designate staff as kind of a real estate broker type person, and negotiate with people and then sell it for 80% of whatever the appraised value is. But the TIF law is actually a lot less restrictive.
Correct.
Than that. So, you know, it requires a higher vote threshold from city council, so a super majority vote, but you could sell the property to a group for a dollar and couple it with commitments to redevelop the building within a certain time frame and financial commitment. So you have a pretty wide latitude in that regard.
Okay, great.
So then do we discuss a deadline after the next, when we talk about the RFP then? The next city council meeting?
You would discuss the deadline at the next city council meeting, provided the RFP gets done. The initial staff recommendation, I think, was 60 to 90 days, and the committee said 120. I think the structural report from Landmarks and Illinois consultants, I don't think we have any concerns about the building the next 120 days, certainly. So I think that we have some time, large snow event, notwithstanding, perhaps, but I think we have time before the building is past the point.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I agree with Alderman Clismo and Alderman Frieders. I think after talking with staff, the idea of selling this, the remediation would be part of the sell too, right? So the city would not incur that expense.
It could be. Yeah, it could be that the city gives it away with no additional commitment. There's TIF incentives available. I know that it hasn't been a bit of a sore point, but. Repairs to the building would be TIF eligible. You could, to the extent that it was put on the tax rolls and generating increment, you can give away a potential future revenue stream there to reimburse somebody for doing some work. Or you can kick in dollar amounts out of your general fund or TIF fund if you wanted to. So you're not restricted from a legal point.
So let's make a deal then.
If I win the $1.6 billion, I will buy it and restore it to its original deal.
Yay,
but I got $1.6 billion. If I win that, all yours. I will write a check in myself. Maybe I get some good karma off of that.
You have $1.6 billion, you don't have to see
him
again.
I can write the check for the Bahamas.
Alright, so I guess it's appropriate then to do most of the table, both of these items under this.
So I'll make a motion to table both items until we've discussed the RFP for the next city council meeting.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Peterson seconded?
Yes.
Thank you. Koch?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Tarullos?
Aye.
Pelosima?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Machewski?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay, hopefully we get some good proposals and we say we do.
Thank you very much.
All right. So under Economic Development Committee report, Alderman Koch, I'll turn it over to you. But number one for the Unified Development Ordinance, was pulled off consent.
Through the request of the staff is seeking authorization by the City Council to solicit an RFP from qualified plannings and or engineering firms for the creation of the Unified Development Ordinance.
Second?
Second.
Alright, comments on that? Chris?
The only question I have in this one is, we're publishing this for 20 days from the 1st to the 21st.
Correct.
And it's due the day before this year. We feel that is a sufficient window. And we're knowing, people are going to be out on vacation potentially before that. But, I don't want to hinder any potential applicants for this program.
Sure, we can extend that. We did the same amount of time for the RP for the comprehensive plan as well. And we're going to be
able to... Yeah, I'm just looking at the holidays. For Thanksgiving, we may want to push it another week. That way you're not right up against the holiday meeting. I don't think I'm here with that.
Cool.
So,
anything else?
Amend it or just take the motion to approve?
We'll make the
motion. Okay, so that's right. Okay.
So we can do a roll call vote on that then?
I'll leave that up to Kathy.
Yes, you do.
Anyone else on that item? Roll call, please.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Machewski?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Carulis?
Aye.
Colosimo?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Okay, one item under public safety report. I'll turn it over to Alderman Colosimo.
I would make a motion to approve an ordinance authorizing the local liquor control commissioner the authority to exempt the location of an establishment with a liquor license from the 100-foot rule of the Liquor Control Act and authorize the mayor, city clerk, to execute.
Second.
Comments or questions?
Yes, sir. Coming out of committee, I didn't support this. I'm not certain what the justification rationale is other than the fact that they have made an amendment to allow for this. Knowing that we've had, in the past years that I've been here, 3 or 4 liquor stores that have been closed over the time, and knowing how much vacant area we have, I don't really see the justification for it. I know restaurants are exempt. Anybody who, I think it's, is it 50 or 60%? Maybe 70% of their revenue, if it's not based on liquor sales, they're exempt from this. We're talking somewhere like the Flight Room, the tastings, those kind of places, they're exempt from this because of what their revenue is. I don't really see the justification for removing or allowing the exemption for the 100-foot setback. It's just my opinion. I don't see where it's necessary. I don't think you have people beating down the doors to try to get into retail inline spaces. I know the state made a change. Looking at the history, I'm not sure if they just decided we want to change it or if some community came to them and said, hey, we've got an issue here similar to what we did with our size of our council. We were supposed to go to 14 members. We had one of our legislators change the law for us, so we didn't have to go to 14 council members. But I haven't seen where the justification of the need is for it.
Yes, sir.
A question I have is, for under the school definition, does a preschool or a child care type school count as that too?
There's some discretion within the interpretation of the law. Typically, we have not interpreted daycare facilities, even if they describe themselves as a preschool, as a school. So we look at it as a certified, governmental act or like a nonprofit organization that provides school, not just 7 to 6 o'clock daycare.
But what if they're accredited for a kindergarten?
We'd have to take a look at the case law and everything else.
So it's more of like an elementary school, a grade school, a junior high, or high school is where we're.
That's the typical definition, yes. There are some inline units that the city with us has to offer that's been a question in the past. We've told people the current law doesn't allow it, but for a state recommendation to cause them to cite their business elsewhere. So, it's been a couple, but it hasn't necessarily been frequent.
Because we would have this issue over by the swimming theater, right? There's a business coming in there, and it's right next to the.
No. So, our interpretation is building line distance. Additionally, we don't consider the academy a school in the definition as well. So it didn't cause an issue for that. But we have had, the compass and the ruler out on, other buildings and sites throughout the city. So including St. Joseph's Cabin is the one I'm thinking of. They've got a kitchen there. They had liquor licenses in there previously, but now there's a church.
Correct. Yes.
So this doesn't impact any new businesses opening in Yorkville. This is based on a new permission allowed by the state government.
It will not have an impact on existing businesses in the city. On new businesses, if there's somebody that wants to locate 40 feet away from a school, it would grant us local control, or the mayor, control of the liquor commissioner, to be able to waive the 100-foot requirement. So that's really what this is. It's about
it's not mandatory. It gives a
liquor control commissioner some discretion to view the circumstances.
Now, you just mentioned St. Joseph's, okay? Now, with the church being there, it used to be an Italian restaurant there that didn't have a liquor license. They had a BYOB, I think. But if a restaurant wanted to go in that area by St. Joseph's there, Chris just said restaurants are exempt.
I'm not familiar with that section.
The definition of a restaurant would be dependent upon, can't be a bar that serves pizza.
Right.
So that it has to be a certain amount of your operation and revenue to pull you away from the restrictions of a strict bar. That's the license.
You want the language, Kevin? The language is provided that this prohibition shall not apply to hotels offering restaurant service, regular ordinance clubs, or to restaurants, food shops, or other places where the sale of alcoholic liquors is not exempted. And that goes in the percentage.
Right, not in the main part of the business.
Right, so it's not the primary.
Otherwise, you couldn't have a Walgreens that sells liquor next to a bar, next to a school. You know, because so many places sell liquor today. But they would be exempt under the statute because most of their business is not liquor sales.
It's primarily in the actual liquor stores, or it's a most parts, you know, tavern, you're going to have a fine line as to what their percentage is of liquor sales to other food.
Yeah, like Bart said, I asked Lisa how this comes up. It's come up a few times over the years, not many times, so it doesn't make a big difference, but why tie your hands?
If they wanted any exemption, they could always come and ask for one, because
they have to go down the state, though, right?
They would have to go down the state for that one.
We have to amend our code now, says
right,
if it's there, it doesn't go. So without this, the mayor has zero discretion. With this, there is discretion to look at the circumstances of where the school is.
All right, anything else? Roll call, please.
Turulis?
Aye.
Colosimo?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Leschewski?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Faders?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay, there is one item pulled from consent under Advisory Committee Report of Lane Machine, and that is number 13.
I'd like to make a motion authorizing the staff to issue a request for proposals for a municipal facility in the Esther Court.
So moved.
Second. Comments or questions? Chris?
I am on this one here that I had a question about is we had the committee extended some dates and changed them a little bit. I noticed that this one, the end date, is right between Christmas and New Year's. So we pushed that off a couple of weeks into January because I know that's problematic. I've had our consultants scrambles to the last minute, and I don't think we really thought that through and we extended it.
Sure. So. No objection. I would say that first full week. January, nobody cares about the specific date.
Push it off into after the new year. And then I did notice one other thing when the amendments were being made to the format in terms of the time frames, when we went from 5 to 20, 21 to 50, those terms.
Yep.
On page 4 and page 5, there's a discrepancy between the dates. I thought we were going to have those same. 1 to 4, 5 to 20, 21 to 50, because on page 4 we can make 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50.
I don't recall that we specifically said that we wanted those two things to be exactly the equal, exactly the same. They could be, really it's more of a descriptor on the, what we're looking for.
If staff's fine with that one, I'm good with that one. I know on our building master list, we talked about clarifying some of the issues of, parks and shelters and whatnot. I noticed we did take
take off a couple of buildings, such as the building we have for Parks or for Public Works, the new building, the house we acquired. We took that off, and we also took off the salt shed building. And reason, you know, those wouldn't be down there, or we have language in here that allows them to still evaluate other buildings if they see fit.
So, in my mind, the more valuable piece of this study is going to be the space needs analysis to identify programmable spaces with staff members and services and how they interact with each other. And then coming up with a square footage count and then an estimate for building the building to be able to provide those services. So for the salt shed, I figured that was going to be replaced.
That's a minor.
Yeah, and then the other one would likely be torn down. So I didn't see the need for it to be programmable space, so I figured why waste the time on trying to figure out if we could, put something in there and have it be useful rather than just acknowledging that they're both obsolete.
I think the bigger one, though, is the land that goes with the new public works site. In terms of programming and access space planning, I think that one does have relevance in terms of how we program that site, that facility. We've talked about closing Tower Lane, possibly reducing development there. But I think that one, in terms of land, I'm not concerned about the house,
sure,
but the land.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going back and going to, because we have land sizes and some things on those. I think that might be relevant.
Yeah, we can make it clear that when we're talking about the public works facility, we're talking about that additional
layer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, this is great.
Quick, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
It says RFQ on the memo, but it says RFP throughout. It's an RFP, correct? Or is it a QP?
We are going to be soliciting proposals from architecture firms, most likely. So I don't remember if we include cost in this one or not. It is an RFQ, which would be cost agnostic until I can select.
Because it goes RFI, RFQ, RFP. So we have the I, one for the Q, and then it's a P.
We'll make sure that those three are aligned.
All right. Thank you.
I believe that the correct one is RFQ. I will send out an email, though, when we confirm that.
Okay.
Anything else on this? We can just approve it as is. Roll call, please.
Milchewski?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Pelosima?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay, nothing from Park Board. One item under PDC. I'll entertain a motion to approve an ordinance amending the Yorkville Zoning Ordinance by amending the regulation for wall signs and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
So moved.
Second.
Comments or questions on this one?
Good job.
I like the graphics.
I know a lot of work. I do like the graphics. I like pictures.
I like
that's
pictures.
Why I like to do studies.
Moves over my hammy. Put that in the minutes.
Roll call, please.
Colosimo?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Leschewski?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay, there's no city council report. Is there a city clerk's report?
No report.
Any community and liaison report? Any staff reports?
No reports.
Okay, so we do have a couple of presentations. First one is for fiscal year 2018 audit.
Yes.
And we have a micro presentation after that.
Yes.
So, Mr. Olson, I'm going to turn it over to you.
We have representatives of our auditing firm here present. They're going to give you a little overview of the audit, and then Rob is going to close with our official audit.
Well, that's one way to chase people out and start talking about the audit.
There isn't exciting stuff.
They're going to go tell their friends it's time for the audit.
Yeah, exactly.
So you better be
right.
Thank you. awesome year. Without their hard work, this would not be possible. So thank you.
I'd like the 15th year in a row we got the cape for the rub?
Seventh,
all right.
Right now.
Yeah. I'm first going to go through the CAFR, the annual financial report, which is the thicker of the two packets you receive. And if you turn to Roman numeral, page 9, you'll actually see the certificate of achievement award, which you received for last year's CAFR, and we're going to be applying for this year as well. So congratulations on achieving that. If you turn a couple pages to regular page 1, you'll find our Lauterbach and Amen letterhead. This is our independent audit report in which we provided you with a clean, unmodified opinion. That's the highest opinion you may receive. It basically states that the financial statements were presented fairly. If you turn a couple pages, you'll find the management discussion and analysis. This is a summary of how the year performed in narrative form. So if you have questions on what the numbers actually mean or fluctuations from year to year, this will be your go-to guide. If you skip past the management discussion analysis, it's about 12 pages, and turn to regular page 3 and 4. This is the start of the actual financial statements, starting with the statement of position. This is essentially your balance sheet of all your funds combined into one spot and modified accrual, which means that your long-term assets and your long-term liabilities are presented here. What you're probably more accustomed to seeing starts on page 7 and 8. This is the start of your individual fund financial statements, starting with the balance sheet. And then your income statement would be started on page 10. On page 10, if you go about three quarters of the way down, you can see that the general fund, which is your operating fund, had an operating increase of about $3 million. This was offset by a transfer out to the Parks and Rec and the sewer funds of $2.7 million. So your net increase in your general fund was about $282,000. If you jump to page 19, page 19 is the start of the notes of the financial statement, which provides a little further detail into how we came up with the figures that we did, with supporting schedules such as capital asset schedules and long-term debt. And couple other schedules on that. I'm not going to go through the notes of the financial statement with you tonight. So if you jump all the way to page 73, page 73 is the start of the budgetary information. So if you're curious on how a specific fund did compare to the budget, this will be where you would start. Anyone have any questions on the annual financial report itself? Okay, I will briefly go through the manager letter with you as well. We had one current year recommendation, which was related to the downtown TIF, the expenses being over budget, which if you go back to page 73, you can see how it was over budgeted. We did have two prior year recommendations, the first being related to GSB 74-75, which is related to your other post-employment benefits. There's a new GSB coming out where we have to calculate what the net pension liability would be. So we'll go out and get a new actuary report to determine if that's material to include. But that'll be implemented next year. The last recommendation that we had was related to there are four funds with deficit fund equity. So that's another item that we will look into for next year's audit. Does anyone have any questions? All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. This will be a brief overview of our audit for the fiscal year ended April 30th, 2018. As Don has touched upon, I'm pleased to announce that the city has received the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting for the seventh year in a row for our CAFR for last year, fiscal year ended 2017, and obviously we'll be submitting again for 2018. Starting off with the general fund, you have a graphic in front of you showing a fund balance history for the general fund starting in the previous fiscal year of 2006, which was the previous high water mark as far as fund balance goes for the general fund. It was about $5.7 million at that time. As you can see from the graph, the bulk of fund balance for both 6 and 7 were comprised of bond proceeds. I believe it was the 2005 bond that was used for the in-town growth program. Moving forward into fiscal year 8 and 9, you can see a greater proportion of fund balance starting to be accumulated of outstanding receivables at the time related to developer debt. Those receivables did not come to fruition, so they were written off in fiscal year 2010, where you can see fund balance decrease to about a negative $525,000 in the general fund, which was its lowest point. Moving forward into fiscal year 11, that amount was cut in half to about a negative $250,000. And then as you get into fiscal year 12 and 13, fiscal year 13 was the first full year that non-homebuild sales tax was implemented. You can see fund balance go up to about $1 million in 12 and then to over $4 million in fiscal year 2013. That dips a little bit in fiscal year 14 as we had some transfers out to close out some funds. And then really since fiscal year 14, fund balance has continued to increase. Last year we finished at $6.2 million, which actually exceeded the previous high in fiscal year 2016. And then this year, I'm pleased to announce the fund balance continues to increase to just shy of $6.5 million, which is about 43% of the fund balance. Something to keep in mind, though, is that as the general fund balance has increased, so have various other fund deficits, particularly the TIF funds. This year, as you can see, for fiscal year 18, the top of the column in white, that represents about $1.4 million in negative fund equity. Lancash finished the year at negative $278,000. The TIFs combined finished the year at about negative $1.1 million. I'll get into those funds a little bit later, but even with adjusted fund balance for the general fund, it's about $5.35 million, which is about 35% of expenditures, and still well above our minimum fund balance policy of 30%. So again, this slide is kind of piggybacks on the previous slide is kind of showing what's happening in the general fund year over year. Fiscal year 16, you had bond proceeds, fund balance went up. Fiscal year 7 and 8, the building roads, the in-town road program, fund balance goes down. The recession hit, you had a bad debt write-off. Again, surplus, we had deficits those years. And then as you can see in fiscal year 12 and 13, we had surpluses. It's a little bit of a blip in fiscal year 14 as we close out the municipal building and rec center fund. And then 15 and 16, you had fund balance, or I'm sorry, you had surpluses of around $1 million, about $500,000 last year, and $282,000 in the year-end audit fiscal year 18. Just want to kind of highlight some of the more important revenue streams in the general fund. I won't go through all of them, but I would like to touch on sales tax. Kind of an unusual year for sales tax. It wasn't really trending very well. You may recall during the budget process, we were showing it maybe about 80 basis points or 0.8% over fiscal year 2017 amounts. I was a little concerned when I got the holiday numbers back in February and March, showing that it was actually 2% less than the year prior. But then as we got sales tax in for March, April, and May, it was actually 7% over higher than it was in the previous year for those months. So all in all, we finished up pretty much right on budget, just maybe a nominal $10,000 under. We had about 2% growth in local or municipal sales tax, and we had almost 3% growth in non-home rural sales tax. Another interesting revenue stream this year was income tax. As you may recall, in June and July of 2017, the state announced that it was doing a one-time cut to the LGDF of about 10, or not out of the lot, but exactly 10%, which would have cost the city, or would have cost us to forego about $55,000 in income tax revenue. Fortunately, we were doing a special census at the time, and that special census, which began to impact our income tax proceeds beginning in January of 2018, actually generated about $95,000 in additional per capita revenue. So we're actually able to finish the year about $40,000 better than we were in fiscal year 17. So it was 1.6 in fiscal year 17, and we finished at 1.64 for fiscal year 18. Finally, just to make another comment about use tax. Use tax has been one of our more robust, if you will, revenue streams over the last several years. It increased 14% over fiscal year 2017 amounts. And now with the Supreme Court decision of Wayfair versus South Dakota, now that internet sales can be taxed, we're hoping that, at least in the short run, we'll continue to have these pretty significant gains in the general fund. On the expenditure side, we have listed all the departments for the general fund, as well as the other operating departments, the library, parking lot, sewer, and water. Again, the department has done a nice job controlling and mitigating costs wherever they can. It's all operational funds did come in under budget. The only fund that was slightly over budget was admin services, about $27,000. And the reason that that fund was over was due to the 2% admin fee that the Illinois Department of Revenue began administering in July of 2017, which was part of the state budget. That cost us about $52,000. And that 2% was applied to non-home rule sales, auto rental, and business district tax, along with another half percentage point that they applied to telecom tax. Here's just a snapshot of general fund performance. As you can see, actual revenues exceeded budgeted revenues by about $280,000. Expenditures for the general fund as a whole came in about $375,000 under budget. Transfers were about $250,000 less, and billing permits were very strong in the current fiscal year, which made a lot of chargebacks and transfers to capital funds. So all in all, we did almost, actually did over $900,000 better than the initially projected. The original budget was projected at a deficit of $625,000, and we did $282,000 to the good. This is our same quick comparison of engineering costs, looking at having engineering in-house, as we did in fiscal year 10 with 5 full-time employees, first outsourcing it, as we've done ever since then. $535,000 was the cost to do it in-house in fiscal year 2010. And in fiscal year 18, the total cost was $448,000, and you see the breakdown of routine engineering versus subdivision inspections, which was about $87,000 less than it was in fiscal year 2010. And additionally, there was $176,000 in the group that was reimbursed by the developer. And then we had about net $430,000 in engineering related to various capital projects. Other items of note found within the CAFR, if you look at paper pages starting number 7, you'll see the various categories of fund balance, spendable, restricted, committed, assigned, and unassigned. Just of note there, you can see that we still have amounts restricted for IMRF. It's down about $250,000 this year to $726,000. And what this represents is we've levied more in the past than we spent on IMRF, which doesn't really mean anything from a budgetary standpoint, but pursuant to GASB 54, we have to report those amounts as restricted in the general fund. Moving on to pensions, beginning on page 54. As you're aware, the city sponsors two pensions, IMRF, the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, and the Police Pension Fund. Just a comment briefly on pensions. The net pension liability for IMRF was significantly decreased. It was at $1.2 million last year, and now it's at $66,000 this year. The reason for that is IMRF had really a fantastic year on their investment side. We did almost 16% net of cost. And our share of the net investment income was about $1.8 million. So that's the primary driver as to why there's such a significant decrease in the net pension liability. Our police pension liability, net pension liability too, did decrease. It was at $11.5 million at the end of fiscal year 2017. And was at $10.9 million, so over $600,000 to the good. Now, also, if you look at the bottom of the page where it shows the net pension liability, you can see that the percent funded for the police pension fund has increased from 41% a year ago to 46% at the end of fiscal year 18. So, obviously, we still have a ways to go, but the fund is progressing in a positive manner. you're interested in long-term debt, we have summaries of all the city's debt beginning on page 39. If you're really interested in long-term debt, you can go to the debt service schedules or the amortization schedules, as they're called, which shows you a breakdown of all the debt on a year-by-year basis. And additionally, there are narratives regarding several governmental enterprise developer commitments that we have beginning on page 51. Moving to the final portion of the CAFR document, we're on the statistical section, which starts on page 129. And again, this is interesting. It covers quite a variety of topics, excuse me, about the city's finances, revenue and debt capacity, demographic and other operating information. Looking at full-time employee counts, you can see we're pretty much in line with where we were in 2005. In 2005, we had 73. At the end of fiscal year 18, we had 79, which is 17 down from our high point in 2008 of 96 full-time employees. Looking on, starting on pages 158, you get a lot of our operation metrics, traffic violations, permits, streets, street inventory, new housing starts per year. So all, you know, interesting things. Turning now to the management letter, which is a much slimmer document that you received in comparison to the CAFR. As Don touched upon, the downtown TIF budget was over by $800,000 due to the bank loan that we entered into to purchase the downtown, the old downtown tank building. But again, this is an offsetting transaction, so you have $800,000 coming in loan proceeds. You have $800,000 coming out on the expenditure side, so there's really no effect on any fund balance. Also, as Don mentioned, the Gatsby Statement number 74, which has to deal with OPEBs. OPEBs are other post-employment benefits. I don't think it's going to have much of a material impact on the city. Some governments actually fund a portion or all of their retiree health care insurance. That's not the situation here in Yorkville. It's 100% on the retiree. We used to do this actuarial evaluation, but we stopped doing it. The auditors wrote it off as immaterial, but pursuant to 74 and 75, we will do it again to see if it's material, and we'll keep you posted on that. That'll be coming up at the end of this current fiscal year 2019. Again, funds with deficit equity have Countryside and downtown TIFs. We're hoping that over time these TIF districts should yield sufficient increment to start to chip away at these negative fund balance positions. Actually, the Countryside TIF already has. It's yielded $30,000 to $50,000 surplus over the last 2 years. So it's starting to chip away at that fund balance. It's currently at negative $459,000. The downtown TIF has over $600,000 negative equity position right now. We're hopeful that over time the TIF will start generating significant to start working that down. Sunflower SSA has a negative fund balance of approximately $22,000, and that's due to one-time expenditures for naturalization of basins that I believe occurred in fiscal year 2016. And that'll be worked back through the property tax process over the next 6 or 7 years. We'll talk more about that next month as we prepare the levy for that SSA. And then finally, land cash. As I mentioned, land cash finished the year with negative $278,000, which is due to the construction of both Riverfront and Bristol Bay Parks. These funds will be reimbursed by an Osley grant, approximately $800,000, which will return this fund to probably several hundred thousand dollar positive fund balance position by the end of fiscal year 2019. So as we look forward, the tax levy is our next thing on the docket. We actually started that process last week with admin tonight. We approved the estimate for the public hearing, which is scheduled for November 13th. And then there's discussion on the 27th, along with potential vote for either the 27th of November or December 11th. After that, we'll start the fiscal year 2020 budget process, starting with the November 10th goal setting session. November, December, and probably most of January, preparing the budget, finalizing it. I have two presentations for the meetings in February, and a public hearing on the 12th of March, and then discussion and potential vote for that final meeting in March, and then the two meetings in April if needed. That concludes the audit presentation. Any questions can be answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
John, Rob.
Interesting note, they had assumed a growth projection. It was somewhere less than 10% over like the next next 30 years and said, it's feasible now, and it's only going to get worse over the next 30 years, we beat those projections even post-recession. So we have more population here even after the crash than CMAP and Metro had expected in their own studies. So the population is definitely there. So after the phase one was completed, they did a phase two and basically determined for cost reasons that Montgomery and Oswego were going to be the two stations for commuter service. So Oswego, you know, off and running after that point, they're end of the line, they acquire a station site on Orchard Road, which they still own. And sometime during the safety lieu federal transportation bill discussions, we get a earmark for $7.5 million to study after service out to this area. So then after that, a couple of the highlights of the 2002 study, there was some data there about ridership. Five trains each way each day, which is a little bit less than I think what Elbert sees now, but it's kind of in that same line. Probably a couple express trains, a couple milk trains. And then you've got four trains that's needed potentially to serve that entire population. The project is going to cost a little bit less than $100 million, so which is a little bit lower than the first phase one study. But that you're going to have, you know, 2,200 riders each day from the area, and then it talks about what the region needs to do in order to you know, start this process after that. So the recession hits, but we know that it's still an issue. So that in 2010, CMAP is doing their Go-To 2040 plan. They put this extension project as a, you know, a project for the region to do. So CMAP uses terms that I don't fully understand in constrained and unconstrained projects. So we're in an unconstrained project, which is a lower priority than a constrained project. So we're included within that list, which is, you know, generally that they're not going to go out and push for it and try to find ways to do it. It's not eligible for some federal and state grants within it. So after we're included in the report, though, it's something that needs to be looked at in general. Metro finally moves on the earmarks for the design and engineering contract down there. So they approved these initial contracts of just under $2 million. They start them. They realize halfway through the environmental assessment that the Orchard Road station is smack dab in the middle of a Yorkville-Oswego border and residential area, and there are no good surrounding land uses that are compatible with a giant industrial area. So they pushed a rail yard and a commuter station out to Yorkville, knew that they had to add us in for change order. And so they did that really without us having to request it or lobby for it at the time. So they approved this change order, add us in, start the study, and then they the board sweeps in at Metro and realizes that maybe they don't want to do the studies while they have so many other funding issues going on. So we made a push after that. You know, we got local and state support to try to get the projects and the studies back moving. Meanwhile, Oswego acquires another 15 acres north of the track, so they're still spending money and making it happen. And then both of us in 2016 and 2017 do a comprehensive plan update. Metro is a major component of both of our comprehensive plans and is, you know, really a need for the area and is an economic development tool for us. So a little bit about the studies that are currently in front of the Metro board. The RFP is out. It should be complete by the end of 2019. So they're looking to rebid the project because it's been so long since they originally awarded it in 2012. We're hoping that it'll be an 18 to 24 month process when they actually award it to when it gets done and says, generally we're going to have this many trains, this could be a potential schedule, here's how many riders we expect, here's how much it's going to cost, here's what it's going to kind of look like, and where the line actually would end. That'll be a function of the study. So the goal within CMAP 2050 plan, which just got approved 2 weeks ago, actually, was to get us moved from the unconstrained project list to the constrained project list, so from low priority to higher priority. And what we heard from CMAP is that because these studies were done by Metra, they would not move us into the constrained projects list. So that is something when they do a 2060 plan, hopefully if we're a little bit farther along, that will be a higher priority, and then we'll have some major backing within the region if the project is completed. So just a note about the 2050 plan, Oswego tells a story. They did a social media campaign when CMAP was asking for comments on the Chicagoland region transportation. 1,000 comments generally, total from the entire region. 700 of them came from Oswego, Yorkville residents, mostly Oswego asking for metro service out to Oswego, Yorkville. So they were blown away by the, you know, the number of comments, the intensity of the comments. So so we got added in there and said that there's great local support for the project. Okay, so let's talk about funding. Operating dollars I'm going to kind of push aside for now. You're going to collect the ticket fare, you know, the feasibility studies in the past, and hopefully the one that we're doing now is going to say, generally, you know, the tickets and whatever region-wide subsidy there is for mass transit are going to support the operation of the project long-term. So capital, you got to build the lines, you got to make the trains, you have to buy into the RTA in one way or another, so that's a major investment. So we've been using a ballpark figure to get the project out to Yorkville or Sandwich of $150 to $300 million total. Those are ballpark figures coming from our best internal estimates from past studies, plus inflation. Also talking to lobbying firms, engineering firms, and Metro themselves, actually. They've said that the $150 to $300 million mark is possible. And that all depends on where it's at, where it is. So how do you come up with $300 million to do it? So let's use the high end. So this project is actually right in line for a federal New Starts program. So this federal transportation program is commonly used to fund commuter rail service extensions to new areas. So we've been told by engineering firms and lobbying firms and Metro themselves that they've seen projects regularly in the $100+ million range get funded generally on a maximum basis of 30% local, 70% federal. When we talked to Metro recently, they said that they've never seen a project that had less than 50% local funding. So we've kind of recalibrated our own internal estimates for state and local funding. So we're thinking 50% is what we're doing. A lot of this, though, is driven at the federal level. So depending on the administration in charge, they've actually pushed more local funding for some of these projects. So that number could actually be shrinking. Depending on what happens in the national elections over the next few years. So for the local share, we've talked about the state capital bill, and we've talked about bonding the local sales taxes. So on the state capital bill, the last one we did was 2009, middle of the recession. Before that, I think it was early 2000. So state capital bills only come along once every 10 years or so. Both governor candidates have talked about capital bills being a major component of whatever they're going to do next year with the budget. And so because it's so infrequent, we kind of figured that this may be our only opportunity for the next 10 years to get state capital funding for a metro extension. So in order to do that, we need local support. So we need our legislators on board. We need all four of the major legislative leaders at the state level to look at our project and go, yeah, this needs to happen up here. There's too much population that's being unserved. We're going to figure out a way to make this happen. So we do that by securing support from the local legislators and then pitching it upwards. We're trying to do a little bit of a grassroots campaign. But really, the state capital bill is done behind closed doors. It's done in caucuses. It's done in either the House or the Senate, depending on who's driving what agendas. And so you need a lobbyist or representative that's down there that says, hey, I'm working for so-and-so. This project is important. It has to happen. Here's the data. Here's why it shouldn't be taken out in different legislative proposals. So we've seen that with our Council of Governments, how fast things can move, and not always in the public. And so you need somebody down there that can keep their ear to the ground, that can get involved in discussions as they happen. We've done some preliminary talks with lobbying firms, just based on recommendations. And all the cost proposals we've gotten back have been between $5,000 and $10,000 a month. If we're interested in pursuing that, we can get a little bit into the terms, but generally they're like lawyer contracts. They're pretty flexible as far as terminations go, so that's good news. We have heard from Oswego. They've already had a public discussion on this proposal. Generally, they're in favor of hiring a lobbyist to be determined who that is and what the actual terms are. We have pitched the idea at a staff level to Kendall County and Montgomery. Have not heard anything back yet. I think it's probably a little bit of a long shot. We'll see what happens there with their boards. And then additionally, we would extend the offer at some point or another to Plano and Sandwich if they wanted to join us too. So we'll see if that occurs. So the other funding component is joining the RTA. And this is important because Kendall County is not part of the RTA. And so just as a reminder, RTA oversees Metro PACE and CTA. So the CTA you can remove from this conversation. PACE is somewhat of a discussion point, but not huge. In normal counties, so not Cook County, the RTA sales tax is 0.75 percentage points. That's broken down. Half the percentage point goes to the county or to the RTA to fund services, and a quarter percentage point normally goes to the county for transportation needs, not related to mass transit necessarily. Kendall County is unique in that it already has one percentage point authorized by referendum, half a percentage point for public safety, half a percentage point for transportation, and so they already have an existing revenue stream for those uses. Would they like an additional quarter percentage point? I don't know. I know that some of the political discussions on some of the statewide proposals have not gone that way, but that money traditionally, if you're in the RTA, would go to the county. So that's the discussion point there. There's two ways to get into the RTA. One, you would actually annex through another municipality, so it's called an extraterritorial agreement. We would say, hey, Aurora, we're going to join. We're going to figure out a way to pay for it, and then they would negotiate with Metro in order to extend service past Aurora and have it be Aurora as a local agency, or another municipality. And then the second is just full-on annexation. It requires the county board to support it to go on the referendum, requires the RTA to consent, and then you would actually go county-wide to join the RTA. So whether or not that would fly, either as a full county or partial, I guess you can do partial annexations too, will be a discussion point along the project feasibility. So next steps, I just want to emphasize this, long and complex. I think some of the social media comments are that this will never occur, hey, this isn't gonna happen. It's a 10 to 15 year process if everything goes right. So the other counties that have went through this service extensions, they've had to move mountains along the way. So really the only way though that we see the project happening is with the state capital bill. And so that's what we're talking about, going out and getting a lobbyist to advocate for your Flono speaker residents. But even that isn't guaranteed. You get a lobbyist, doesn't mean that you're going to get a piece of any state funding. But we see, because of the election, because of the state capital bill, a lack of 10 years. This is probably the best time, the next few years at least, to have the conversation. So that's it. If everybody's okay, or if anybody has questions about the individual components, happy to take them. But the next step really is a discussion about doing a lobbyist contract potentially at an upcoming city council meeting.
Can't see
you, sorry.
I just have one question, Mark. With this lobbyist, so we would start that like sooner, and then so if it's 15, 20 years away, we'd be paying that whole time period?
Not necessarily. The contracts that I've seen and heard about are generally month to month or even day to day. It could be like the one day out. So it's like a lawyer. It's like whatever work has been completed, you basically button up, then you terminate. So there wouldn't be a long-term commitment unless contractually the lobbyist had asked for one. But generally, those are short-term contracts. So you could say, I'm going to approve one. We're going to lobby for 3 months, and if the state capital bill ends up going nowhere, you can terminate.
Right.
Or you can say, once we're in the bill and we're reasonably sure that it's approved.
But you have to start now because the capital bill will be coming up in the next general assembly.
Yeah, we're talking about meetings with 8 legislators. So there's only 4 in the bill, but there's 8 in Oswego. Okay, so you got to meet with each one of them and say, here's our population, here's why we think this is feasible, here's all the variables and discussions that we're going to have over the next 10 years to do this. And then you have to meet with the leaders, you've got to meet with the RTA, they have to be on board, the Metro has to be on board. So there's 3 or 4 months on a good time frame of just legwork that has to get done before, the state capital can be proposed and we're ready.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right now, this project is not on the fiscal constraint list for the go-to.
It's a lower priority.
It's a lower priority. But CMAQ will make amendments to that plan if we make some changes. I mean, it's been done in the past that they've made changes. But we have potential to get this moved up on the list with progress.
Yeah, I believe the comment has been made that if we finish the studies, it shows that it's feasible. At that point, when the phase one engineering is done, that they would reconsider it at that point.
So then probably 2 to 3 years from this point, we can have that potentially amended with that process.
Yep.
Aren't two of our county board members on CMAP? I thought it was Brian or Vasco.
I believe one is the alternate for the other. I think Kevin County is one of them.
Also, Don Browley is one of the.
Yeah, he's got a board seat that I think represents Kane and Kent counties board together.
Anyone else?
Well, I think it's needed.
Check.
We're a collar county at this point. A lot of people work. When we look at it, that chart was interesting, the percentages. I'm sure they said it was 2005. I'm sure it started 2015.
15.
I'm sure in the last 3 years it's even gone up. Yeah. We're at 9% of our workers are going into the city every day. You know, that's higher than half the cities on that list. So, yeah.
That's horrible. I mean, it's horrible going to the city.
It is. I got to go maybe twice a year, and I literally. I have no interest in doing that.
So. I do it a couple times a week, and I'm so
happy. We also know have
to. And I have.
I hope they choose us.
So everyone's okay going forward with that lobbyist?
Please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Bert. Bye.
I think this part we are smoking.
Ralph Wiggins. Ralph Wiggins.
Do we have any additional business? We do have an executive session. Is there anyone here with citizens' comments after executive session? No? Hearing none? I will entertain a motion going to executive session for discussion of meetings and for litigation updates. Roll call, please.
Terulis, Milshewski, Pelosimo, Peterson, Koch, Funkhauser, Frieders.
Present.
You just got to make it difficult on us, don't you?